Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio. It is Monday, November 3rd, and tomorrow is the election. Can you believe it's here? Finally, finally, finally. This will be great when it's over. And it's going to be a historic day in any number of ways. Turnout is one of them. But let's get back to comparing Obama and McCain on foreign policy. So I got to tell you that I'm with Obama on this one, that it's more important whether you get the initial decision to go into Iraq right. Now, McCain thinks he got it right, so does Bush. But I guess they'll go to their graves believing that, because it's such a serious decision. To doubt yourself at this point might be difficult. But it was pretty clear to me at the time, as it was to Obama, that we shouldn't have been going in. Bush, Cheney, and the neocons used 9/11 as leverage to get the country to let them go to war against Iraq. Promised us it would be easy, and it wasn't. They can say what they want about weapons of mass destruction. I say they were too afraid after 9/11. You've got to keep things in perspective. And 9/11 was a trauma. You know, when people get attacked, like in your individual lives, if somebody gets mugged on the street, they are traumatized. And the question is, how quickly can you recover from that and have a realistic degree of fear about everyone you pass on the street? A lot of people flinch after an accident, a car accident, or after a mugging or something for months because of the trauma of the experience. The question is, how quickly can you recover, get your equilibrium back? Bush and Cheney, they did one of two things. Either they were very calculating and they took us to war using 9/11 as leverage, or they were too afraid and they shouldn't have been in leadership positions. McCain's in the same boat. If you still believe that taking Saddam Hussein down was the right thing to do, even though we know now it cost us 4,000 people, and we know now it cost us up to $1 trillion by the time we're done, and we know now we still may leave a mess behind in Iraq, no matter when we get out and who withdraws, there's something wrong. So I know there's people out there with a different viewpoint, but I'd like you to overcome your fear here. The second piece of this is Afghanistan. The Bush administration took their eye off the ball and went into Iraq, and Osama bin Laden is still out there. Can you imagine if Al Gore had won the election in 2000 and he was president for 8 years and Osama bin Laden was still at large? You know what the Republicans would have said in 2004 when they didn't catch him? Do you know what they'd be saying in 2008 against the Democratic candidate that wanted to continue Democratic rule if we didn't get the mastermind of 9/11? I hate to think what it would be, but they would never let go of it. We wouldn't be hearing about Bill Ayers and all of this. We'd be hearing constantly about the fact that Gore said he would get bin Laden and he never got him, that he failed to get our worst enemy. That's what's happened with the Bush administration. And we mostly forget about it. We let that slide. We don't mention it very often. The Democrats aren't out there harping about bin Laden, in part because it isn't clear Obama can get him in a short period of time. Our initial one or two options, chances to get Osama bin Laden came very early in the war, and we lost him. So Obama's been saying for several years, we need more troops in Afghanistan, and it's time to go get bin Laden. I have to say I agree with that. When you think about the war on terror, to the extent that term makes any sense anyway, the main thing that's emboldening terrorists out there is not that the U.S. might pull out of Iraq. It was a mistake going in. So we ought to correct that to get out. But also, the main thing that Al-Qaeda, or the main thing that the rest of the world thinks the U.S. ought to be doing, is going after the people that got him on 9/11. You talk about emboldening terrorists. Osama bin Laden got away with it so far. If we'd gone out, hunted him down, killed him or captured him, put him on trial in the first year that after 9/11, the world would look very differently at the United States. They'd say, there's a country that can get things done, and you don't want to cross them because you'll be hunted down. But we can't say that yet. So I got to say that on both Iraq and Afghanistan, I think Obama's been right much more than McCain. The third issue really here is I'm going to say two words here, and that is alliances and interdependent. You know, we live in an interdependent world. We have for some time. Individuals are interdependent. No man is an island, as the poem goes. It's true, and the world is interdependent. We tend to have this ideology of independence in this country, and we think that the opposite must be dependence, and dependence is bad because it means somebody else has got control or is responsible for you. So we value independence and we eschew dependence. But that's the wrong way to think of this, really. We really should be thinking of it as interdependence, because the world's interdependent, and there's nothing wrong with being interdependent and turning to allies. We have alliances. We forged them over many decades and even centuries. And for the last 8 years, the Bush administration has mostly ignored them. In part, that's the neocon attitude. It's the attitude of Bush and Cheney. But they use the excuse of going into Iraq to say, well, we can't wait for the French. You know, they aren't going to side with us to go in and get Saddam. It turns out the French and the Germans were right to use caution. And Mohammed al-Bertai, who ran the IAEA, the International Atomic IAEA Energy Association, I guess, or Hans Blix, who ran the inspections, was looking for weapons of mass destruction. The neocons and the Republicans mocked them when they came out and said, we can't find weapons in Iraq. We think they're in compliance. We think they've gotten rid of most of them. And when Saddam said he didn't have them, they mocked the UN and they mocked Alberti, and they've never come back and admitted they were wrong. I've never heard that once. People want to say, why are Democrats so upset at the Bush administration? There's this Bush derangement syndrome they talk about. It's because he can't admit he was wrong about Iraq, and neither can McCain, and he can't admit that the people they mocked at the UN were more professional, more capable, and had a better read on the situation. So, when it comes to alliances, it pays to pay attention to your alliances. It isn't that we will allow the French to veto our foreign policy decisions, as Republicans said about Kerry in the 2004 election. It's that you consult with your friends, and you're stronger when you go after your enemies in concert with others. For example, we've argued about this for the better part of 7 years, but the Democrats are right that the way to fight the war on terror is through legal means. The primary way we're going to shut down money, we're going to shut down terrorist cells in civilized countries, and the only place they do us harm, the terrorist cells, well, with the exception of the airplanes, that when we think we got that problem licked, the main place they do us harm, let's put it that way, is inside our country or another Western democracy, or even other countries on Earth like Indonesia and the Philippines that have had some problems with this. India, Pakistan have a special kind of problem there. But the issue here is that this is a law enforcement issue. Unless we're going to invade Italy or invade Germany to get terrorist cells, this comes down to our government working with their government, eavesdropping on them, following, surveilling terrorists, capturing terrorist cells. You don't bring military into these. That's too heavy a hand. So, we're in an interdependent world, and this brings me back to something that you've heard many times from me, and that's the difference between a red state of mind and a blue state of mind. If you're in a blue state of mind, you understand that alliances are important, that there's an interdependency among nations, and we are strongest when we exert our leadership by persuading others to join us and going through strength with strengths in numbers. If you remember Bush's father, Bush 41, engineered the removal of Saddam Hussein from Kuwait, got the majority of the world to go along, including virtually every Arab and Muslim country except Iraq. We kicked Saddam out, and we had the world's approval. Not only that, our allies picked up the tab. We supplied the soldiers. They paid for most of it. Not the approach Bush and Cheney took. They decided your children and your children's children should pay for their wars. So, if you're in a blue state of mind, you understand that talking to people makes sense before you attack. Bush said he was going to let the inspectors do their thing, and he gave them 2 months, and then he said, we haven't found them, and since we know they're there, you haven't done your job. Saddam's lying because he says they aren't there, so we're going in. Just an imprudent thing to do. Now, I think McCain's a little more prudent than Bush. The problem is, well, it's a couple things here, really, but McCain's a fighter pilot. Obama's a lawyer. A lawyer is deliberative. A fighter pilot shoots from the hip, is willing to take chances. I'm not sure that's the guy you want in the White House. The other piece of this is McCain is scarred by Vietnam. It's natural that he would be. He was a prisoner for 5.5 years, and he's been amazingly forgiving towards the people that tortured and imprisoned him. But when you look at the difference between the right and the left on Vietnam, it's interesting. People talk about the lessons of Vietnam. Both sides took different lessons from Vietnam. Those of us on the left took the lesson that you cannot go into another country, play a home game on their turf, and expect to win when the game is war. Eventually, you have to leave, and they get their country back. And unless you're willing to go in and dominate them and be brutal, you can't keep them in line for the time you're there. The French learned that in Vietnam. We didn't. McNamara has written a book and has his list of the things we didn't understand about Vietnam. And when you read them, they read very much like they could have been written for Iraq. That we didn't understand the culture we were dealing with. That we didn't understand the tribal and local tendencies. That we didn't know the language and the customs. That we thought military might could overcome all these disadvantages. And many more examples. So McCain and Republicans, a lot of Republicans and conservatives, come out of the Vietnam War and say, the lesson of Vietnam, and in fact, President Bush said this when asked about this while he was passing through Vietnam a year or so ago. They said, Mr. President, do you think there's any lessons in the Vietnam War for the situation in Iraq? And he said, yeah, if you leave and you quit, you don't win. He didn't quite say it that way, but that's essentially what he came up with, right? A lot of people think that we tied the general's hands and we didn't let him win, and otherwise the U.S. would have, quote, won that war. Of course, when we say we lost, what do we mean? We don't mean we surrendered. We mean it was a stalemate. But the argument on the left is, look, that war was never winnable in the first place. People live there. You cannot dominate them. You cannot root them out. You cannot win in a situation like that long term. So why go in the first place? So the lessons that the Democrats took out of Vietnam, and keep in mind, the Vietnam cost the Democrats a lot more. The Democrats were in power when Kennedy sent advisors. The Democrats were in power when Kennedy escalated and then Johnson escalated. Johnson couldn't run for re-election in 68. The Democratic convention was in shambles in Chicago, and there were the attacks in the streets and the violence in the streets because the liberals of the country turned on the Democrats, not the Republicans. They turned on the Democrats because they were in power and they were in charge of the war. Johnson couldn't run for re-election. Hubert Humphrey couldn't beat Nixon. Nixon got elected in 68, promising to end the war, and he got re-elected in 72, promising to end the war. So the lessons of Vietnam are very different for the Democrats. They take more the lessons that McNamara took out of it, which is you've got to understand cultural differences, and you only go into war, as Colin Powell now says, with the Powell Doctrine. It has to be a strategic issue for you. It has to be of great strategic importance to your country. It has to be overwhelming force, and you have to have an exit strategy. And that takes care of the military conversation. And we're going to come back and talk about leadership after this. Here's a little bit of The Who playing live right now at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. Here's a shortened version of Bargain live from The Who's next album. Tomorrow's the election, and let's move on and quickly handle the leadership issue. So the third component here, besides domestic and foreign policy, is who'd make the better leader? McCain's argument is, I got the military career, and I've got the Senate career. He was also a squadron commander. That's a squadron leader, I think he was, or in the later years after the Vietnam War. And he's arguing that's his executive experience, because he says that Obama and Biden don't have it. Well, that's true, but they really discount Obama's experience at Harvard and with the Harvard Law Review, for example. He was not only made Harvard Law, as about 50 students do after their first year at Harvard. He was elected editor, which I think only one or two students make the next year. That says something. It also says something that he was a law professor for a number of years. Now, you could argue that's not executive experience, but Harvard Law Review is a bit of executive experience. Also, the biggest version of executive experience here is the campaign itself, and we've talked about this before. Think about this. McCain, Hillary, and Obama all ran campaigns for the better part of 2 years. They had to set it up. They had to hire people. They had to inspire people. They had to get people to work for them. They had to oversee it, and they had to make the primary decisions and then delegate. McCain's campaign imploded last July. He mismanaged his money and overspent and had to let a lot of people go, and he never got those advisors back because he didn't have the money for a long period of time. And he got back in it and won the nomination, to his credit. Hillary made a couple of big blunders. She neglected to pursue the caucus states, and Obama pursued him and won the election on that basis, won the nomination on that basis. She also forgot to plan, or decided she didn't need to plan after Super Tuesday. She figured she'd have it wrapped up by then. Huge mistake, a blunder that cost her the election or the nomination. So meanwhile, Obama is doing smart things. Obama has run a near flawless campaign. That's a sign of executive experience. Beyond that, I'll just say that I think Obama's going to surprise us with his judgment. And I think it's been shown in recent months to be better than John McCain's judgment, which is why I'm coming out once again. I've announced this back in March, but I'm reiterating to my audience that Obama is clearly the better choice and would clearly make the better president, and Barack Obama will also be an historic president. We're going to look back on this election and say this was the year that we got away from 221 years of white male presidents. It's really pretty amazing that we're going to elect a black man. It was only 40 years ago that Martin Luther King was assassinated and Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And we had race riots 40 years ago in this country. It's pretty amazing and inspiring. So let's move on from that to some predictions. So here are my predictions for the election. My first prediction is that the one thing that they're going to talk about Tuesday all day and all night is not the results per se, it's the turnout. The turnout in this election is going to be unprecedented, it's going to be huge, and it's even going to exceed what the pundits are saying. They're now saying 130 million people may go to the polls. It's maybe even larger than that. It's going to surprise people. The turnout among African Americans is going to surprise the pundits. The turnout among Hispanics is going to surprise the pundits. The turnout among the youth is going to surprise the pundits. And Obama is going to win some of these states even more comfortably than he appears to right now, because his folks are simply more energized. They also have a ground game. They have got a get-out-the-vote effort. They are contacting a lot of people, and it's going pretty well. In terms of who will win what, the polls have been showing a pretty consistent 6 to 8% lead for Obama nationwide. Now, that poll doesn't mean much since electoral votes are awarded on a state-by-state basis, but it was at about 8%. It had looked like it climbed to 10. It was really at 8. It fell to 8. Then it fell to 6 about 4 or 5 days ago, and the Republican story was that McCain was catching up. It's now back. It's now stabilized after going dipping under 6. It stabilized between 6 and 8%. I think Obama will win 54% of the popular vote. Now, it depends how much Bob Barr and the other candidates get, like Nader. Possible it could be less than that, but he will definitely break 50%, the first Democratic president to do that since Jimmy Carter. mainly because Ross Perot kept Clinton from doing it. I think it will be an electoral landslide. I think it'll be in the range of 340 or more electoral votes. 270 are needed to win. McCain isn't going to come close. And I think he's going to win a few states that are going to surprise people, including Iowa and New Hampshire, which are kind of expected, but Bush took them once in each of his two elections. He's going to win New Mexico. He's going to win Nevada, states that typically go red. He's going to win Virginia, it looks like. And then it's over. If they declare Virginia, and that'll be one of the early states, polls close here at 7 p.m. tomorrow, and they may call that state fairly early. It'll depend. He's up by about 4% now, Obama is. It's 13 electoral votes. There's no way to get those back. And if Virginia goes for Obama, some of the other red states will as well. Ohio and Florida are both at about 4% in favor of Obama. He could take both of those. So McCain's playing defense. That's a tough ball game to be in. So I think we're going to wake up Wednesday morning and Barack Obama will be the president-elect. And for all of you folks that fear him, don't worry about it. He's not a communist. He's not even a socialist. He's a mature man who's deliberative, who's inclusive, who's going to think before he acts. He's not going to get us into foreign entanglements we shouldn't be part of. In short, he's going to be one heck of a president. That'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. We'll be back next week with a little wrap-up of the election. Until then, you can read my writings at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. In spite of how the election turned out from your point of view, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.